Lunch with Leon from ITT Hub. Leon Daniels is in the northeast of England, having lively lunches with key stakeholders in the region, including Martin Gilbert at Go Northeast and the amazing team at Beamish Museum. A friendly northeast welcome for Lunch with Leon.
And so here I am, live in the northeast of England. And here's my first guest.
Lunch with Leon. Next stop, Martin Gilbert.
So, Martin, we have been travelling today on new buses, not quite such new buses. We've been travelling on your new electric Yutong vehicles, which are beautiful. And we're here now at Concert Depot, which is not the Concert Depot I remember from my childhood, which was a couple of miles up the road. I'm delighted to meet one of your team who came from the old Concert Depot, then to Stanley, and then here to New Concert. So he's my last remaining contact with the old depot that I remember going to when I was about 10. But here, brand new depot, beautiful facilities, loads of new vehicles. So passengers must be flocking back.
Well, they were until we had the global pandemic. But we are getting new passengers, and it's great to be welcoming you here today and also having you on our bus network. But yeah, you're right. There's been a lot of investment, particularly on this side of our network. There's been a complete overhaul of the local bus network and the supporting infrastructure that goes behind it in terms of a brand new state-of-the-art depot opened in 2019 and then two rollouts of brand new buses for the express routes into Gateshead and Newcastle. I mean, also a bit of a sort of polishing of the existing legacy fleet here and a lot on marketing. And that, for us, was really starting to turn around the fortunes of the North East bus network that had been in decline for so long. We saw our first full quarter of both revenue and passenger growth before the pandemic hit. But as we stand today, we're in the same situation as everybody else. We've reduced passenger numbers, but a lot of things going on to try and turn that around and recover the situation.
And we're just recording this today as Bus Recovery Grant 2 details have come out. So the mass deregistrations that were threatened today for April won't now be taking place, but it's only a short reprieve, isn't it?
It is, and also, you know, we've had the headlines about it today. We're going to need to understand the detail in terms of the quantum of the sum of money. It looks as if it's not quite at the heights of BRG1, but we need to crack into the detail of that. There's other interdependencies with things like the concessionary fare scheme, where local authority budgets are under pressure, and a lot of their budgets for the year ahead have been set on the assumptions of potentially a 20 and in some cases even 25% cut. So very welcome news today about the extension of government support, which is desperately needed if we're going to maximise from the huge investment that's already been made with the support that the industry's already received, but most importantly with the huge opportunities ahead in terms of air quality and congestion and connecting economies. But we have, as it stands today, been set back with the Omicron variant, with Plan B restrictions, and of course we still have some residual worry in some parts of our patronage base from the avoid public transport messaging and the seemingly unfounded demonisation of getting on board the bus. It should be a good thing, not something that people should be fearing.
Well, we certainly had some happy customers today, which is great. So, I mean, Go Ahead Northeast has got Martin Gilbert stamped all over it. We've got different liveries. We've got different names for different types of services. We've got some lovely interiors with leather seats, tables, phone holders, Wi-Fi, and so on. So that's got to be attracting people back. It worked very successfully for you in Reading. And so here you are working your magic in Newcastle. But there's lots of marketing activity that people could learn from, I hope.
I'd like to think so. I mean, I wish it was magic. It's a lot of hard graft and most importantly, a huge team effort. Actually, the route branding concept, Go North East, was one of the first operators in the UK to deploy that over 10 years, nearly 20 years ago now, under the leadership of the late, great Peter Huntley, and other operators have followed since. So Go North East has quietly been very busy with better promotion and marketing and brand segmentation. And what we've tried to do over the past nearly 4 years since I've, you know, had the honour of being appointed MD here is to say, right, how do we take that to the next level? How do we keep pace with the changing trends? Not so much bus trends, but societal trends around us. You know, you go into a high street cafe. High street cafe today is very different to the high street cafe of 20, 30 years ago. People's expectations are greater. The way people interact, the use of technology, mobile phones, phones, social media, and also for us, you know, I mean, branding is great. I'm a huge supporter of it. It doesn't fit for every purpose, and there's a whole mechanical exercise that goes on to make sure we try and get the right buses on the right route. But actually, just simple things like how do we differentiate between our express longer distance services and our more local services? And so, one of the big things that we did pre-pandemic was launch X Lines, our express into urban network, which are the sort of places you would traditionally expect a railway line to be. Obviously, we don't have that much local rail in the northeast, so these bus links, these faster express bus links, are the equivalent of the rail network, and we try and package them slightly differently from your everyday local bus service. And yeah, you know, I'd like to think a lot of the things that we've done in trying to emerge from the pandemic, things like our evening flat fare offer. We've done the rollout of the electric buses came on stream during the pandemic. We've done even more aggressive marketing and branding are certainly helping accelerate our growth, but we still have a very long way to go as we stand today.
The electric buses look especially good at night. They're just magic, aren't they? We saw them in Newcastle city centre last night. They just looked amazing.
Yes, I mean, we said to ourselves, look, this can't just be any old bus just powered by electric. The opportunity to have full zero emission buses and Go Ahead Group buys its electricity from sustainable zero emission source as well. We really need to package this product as a sort of bus of the future experience. We didn't want to lose any ounce of opportunity to say this is something very different to your average type of bus route. So we went into every single detail from the external look and feel. So we worked with Yutong to have a new cowling around the roof that covers all the lumps and bumps of the batteries and the generator and the power control units and the rest of it. We used lighting to really sort of give it again another game-changing look. We worked with Race Stunning at Best Impressions on a snazzy new livery for them. We came up with a brand name that is our electric bus brand name, Voltra, and we did a lot of work on the interiors, even with the grassy flat flooring that just helps us communicate the environmental credentials of the buses. But we also, that's our first route for tap-on, tap-off contactless bank card ticketing. We've also got a brand new state-of-the-art passenger information system that's come from our friends at McKenna Brothers that shows connecting rail times, connecting bus times, connecting metro times, and therefore we've tried to work to make this a true end-to-end bus of the future experience.
Well, it was really impressive, Martin. And the passengers, I mean, the other thing that struck me, this has always been good bus operating territory, but it's also quite spread out. And so the car is a viable alternative for lots of people in this area. But are we seeing anything like generationally? So are we seeing perhaps more environmentally aware younger people more likely to use buses than before?
Definitely. Young people are our key growth area, and this company pioneered some very attractive low flat fares for young people, and it's been interesting as to how you continue to frame things like a £1 fare with a sort of changing economic picture. And we've moved away from the simplicity of that offer purely for economic reasons, but actually we've replaced it and evolved it with what I believe is an even better offering, that you can now get young person's fares on our bus network up to and including the age of 25. So it's not just your traditional 16 scheme or age 19 scheme, it's now up to 25, which is designed to continue to support bus use, not just into further education at college level, but into university, into apprenticeships, and or into the first stages of people's careers. And that's a big, big, big growth area for us. But you rightly mentioned that the geography of the northeast, yeah, we go from the densely populated areas of the bulk of Tyne, and we're, you know, your Newcastles, your Gateshead, your Sunderlands, and then we're also the County Durham operator, which has a far greater share of rural operation and lots of fields that we drive buses through. We're out the chimney pots that generate passengers, and that's an increasing challenge in terms of making sure that the buses is attractive to meet every single journey need. And we have to say, look, yeah, the bus is a bulk mover of people. It is not necessarily the most efficient solution for every single journey need, but there are an awful lot of journey needs that the bus can be the solution for, and it's about trying to target that in the right way to the right market and get that emotional connection.
Sure. Now, one of the other things you showed me today reminded me of something I failed to do in TfL. So I had the opportunity to bring the car clubs into the TfL ecosystem with the Roundel, thereby making car clubs feel like they're part of the public transport mix. We didn't do it for a whole series of reasons, which is something I have always regretted. But you showed me today a partnership with a car club that allows bus pass holders to use car club cars?
Absolutely. So we call it Flexility, Flexible Mobility, and it's a new product that we launched at the tail end of last year with the Cowills Car Club. They're a Newcastle-based car club company, but actually they have operations nationally. And what we've done there is, actually it was something that, again, is not entirely new. The concept of a shared account was actually launched by Go North East about 15 years ago. But what we've done is we've digitised that onto a smart card, we've re-promoted it, and we now have the ability for people to buy a bus season ticket on a plastic smart card, tap the bus ticket on the pass on the bus, it operates all the buses, and book through the app on the car club and use the same key to open the car. And we've used that today. We've had the use of a lovely electric car to do some of our travelling around that perhaps wasn't quite so convenient on the bus because we were making an obscure journey that very few people do, and therefore it doesn't justify a bus route. So we've been able to blend that in a way that says, well, you don't need to own a car. For the odd occasion you're doing a trip that you don't have a direct bus for, here's the opportunity to have a very affordable car solution. And I'm a big advocate of this. I am now over a year without a car, and that is because I have a very good bus service past my door, and for the very rare occasions I need to do a journey like we've done today, I now use the car club.
I think that's going to be part of the future, because I can understand people downsizing from three cars to two, or even from two cars to one. But there's always something in the back of your mind, that urgent mission in the middle of the night. Remember, the family's got appendicitis, a sick relative, something like that. So people like their independence. And therefore, going from one car to zero is a very big step for people. But actually, if there's a decent car club service close enough, then actually that starts to go away, doesn't it? Because the car club, you can book it in minutes.
Absolutely. And also, if it's part of a sort of sustainable transport mix, we shouldn't feel too bad about the occasional use of a taxi. You know, obviously, of course, a single occupancy vehicle is the least efficient use of something like that. But as part of a wider sustainable transport mix where you're using the bus for all the journeys that you possibly can, supplemented with a car club or taxis, and of course, walking and cycling, you know, using the bus is a very active thing to do. You know, get your sort of step count in getting to and from the bus stop, and cycling. And we've also done a lot with cycling, so our express bus services here where we are today in Consett, we can take two bikes on board those buses as well, and that's a new innovation, if you like, where we've been able to respond to some feedback from our stakeholders, and we've got some good commuting capability there to be able to bring your bike on board the bus, and also a huge leisure market for weekend travel, particularly out in the beautiful Derwentside countryside that we're seeing around us this afternoon.
It is an absolutely gorgeous day here in County Durham, and not quite as I remember it as a child. So we can let our listeners into a bit of a secret, because the reason we had to take a car club car at all is because we had an awkward journey to make, because we had in the time available to get to Beamish. So for everybody's information, the Beamish team will feature in a separate podcast in this series, and we talked to the Beamish people. We enjoyed some bus rides. We had saw some trams, trolley buses, and the wonderful new 50s street at Beamish. We'll talk about that in another episode. But you've been working really hard with the Beamish people in a collaborative way.
Absolutely. Beamish Museum, we're what's called a friend of Beamish Museum, and they're a friend of us as well. And the relationship with them is really on three levels. They're doing an excellent job in keeping the very proud history of Go North East and its predecessors, the Northern General Transport Company, alive. They even have a replica Northern General bus depot. They have some wonderful preserved members of the Northern General fleet, dating back to the early 1900s. The company was formed in 1913. They have one of the original BMMO built SUS buses, it's called, SOS, and we support them with a number of activities. They have lots of artifacts in their collection, so we're very proud to have a strong link for them with them in that respect. The second is as a travel destination. So Beamish Museum is closed today, and therefore our express seasonal bus service that we have, the B1, isn't operating today. There are other bus services there. That would have involved a change or two for us today, which is and we needed to get between there and the depots, which is why we used the car club, and it was a good demonstration of that. But under normal visitor season, they're also a key part of our network and part of the leisure part of our network and a place that people want to get to. And the third thing is that they are play a really active and key role in the wider economy of the North East and as a destination and the visitor economy. So we sit on the destination management organisation's boards for Visit County Durham and also for Newcastle and Gateshead and the North East of England Chamber of Commerce as well. And they are part of that visitor and business economy that is so important that when we talk regionally about the North East of England and there's talk about, you know, levelling up and even things like the City of Culture bid for Durham for 2025, they're things that are mutually beneficial to both organisations and we support each other and are part of that mix.
So one of the features post-pandemic is that we've had a really serious staff shortage across the industry. People leaving our industry to go, incentivised to go and work for Amazon and for Tesco's and so on for higher rates. We've lost a number of people, possibly because of the coronavirus, possibly because of leaving the EU, but whichever way around it is, we've had a really bad period on staff. And of course, inflation is 5% and 6%, which is not good conditions for recruiting and retaining of staff in a market where passengers are fiercely resistant to fares changes. So what's the news up here in the Northeast? Because to be fair, the Northeast always had perhaps a better time. There seemed to be more labour available in the Northeast than in other parts of the country. So what's it like?
Well, you mentioned the potential impact of the country leaving the EU, and we looked at the demographic of our workforce, and we felt we were in a very good place regarding that. But of course, actually, there was a whole series of other industries that weren't, that have then caused the abstraction and churn. So we, like many other sectors, and I'm always keen to say to people, it's not just a bus industry issue. That this has impacted all sorts of sectors. You know, you'd go to pubs and restaurants, and they'd apologise for a shortage of staff. Postal services were taking longer to deliver. Councils were struggling to get bins emptied. The start of what has been headlined as a national labour shortage has impacted all sectors, and it absolutely impacted us too. And it impacted us very quickly. Reflecting back on the start of that, I think it's fair to say that in emerging from the depths of the pandemic, a lot of people evaluated their work-life balance. We had a lot of people who had worked beyond retirement age suddenly deciding, do you know what, now's the time for me to retire. We had people who were retiring early, and we also had a lot of people just saying, well, do you know what, we've been through a pretty awful 18 months, that's given me more time to reflect, I want more time in my family, or I don't want to be working shift, or I want to do something different. Now, encouragingly, for every one person that decided they wanted to change or do something different, we equally had a number of people who said, no, actually, I want to come and work for a bus company. And, you know, it's not a bad job, actually. It's very rewarding in terms of putting smiles on people's faces with the daily interaction with customers, getting out and about and seeing the world, particularly in the beautiful countryside that we're sitting in here this afternoon. A lot of people get huge, immense satisfaction of driving a vehicle, and they are jobs with real purpose. We get people to work, to school, to healthcare, to onward travel, and increasingly we have a really important role to play in terms of air quality, and that's actually very attractive to some people. But it takes time to train people up, and what didn't help during that period were the delays to processing licence applications that we saw through the DVLA, and we found ourselves in all of a sudden a very competitive marketplace where really it was an employees market, not an employers market, and a lot of people were on the back foot in terms of pay rates and so on and so forth. And because of the licensing regime, it was very difficult for the bus industry, once it had attracted somebody to it, to actually turn them into somebody that actually really started, because you then say, right, well, now you've got to wait 6 to 10 weeks for your license and then a start date, and then you're going to go through all these tests and training. So we had just the same issues as many other bus operators, length from breadth of the country, which was not helpful in trying to rebuild customer confidence as we emerge from the pandemic as well. I am painfully aware of that. But everybody has done the very best they can. I am exceptionally proud of how our team has come together to get through that period. We, right from the start, agreed as an executive team here that we would take as an open and transparent approach as we possibly could with that. So every evening, at 6 o'clock, we published a list, full list, of the journeys that were potentially at risk for the following day, with a caveat to say, look, we're still going to carry on working through this, but you need to know, folks out there, that there's a possibility that these journeys might not run, so you can plan your day around that accordingly. Now, I believe that was the right thing to do. Other organisations dealt with it on the day, put stuff reactively out on social media. Some didn't even say anything at all. Some didn't need to say anything at all. If they had a greater share of higher frequency services, they were able to simply turn down the frequencies. But that approach helped us manage the situation. It helped us better communicate it to colleagues as well. And thankfully, we're really coming out of the woods on that now. We still have a very low level of cancellations on certain days of the week. It was all exaggerated by increased sickness as well, because we had NHS catching up on various hospital matters with operations and diagnosis of new issues. And of course, COVID has still been a thing and has driven very high levels of staff sickness as well. So it's a very painful and unprecedented period for the industry, which I don't wish to go and be a part of ever again. I hope we can avoid that sort of thing.
Coming soon, ITT Hub 2022. Join us at Farnborough International on May 11th and 12th. A huge array of manufacturers, energy providers, data experts, and disruptors at our main exhibition. Also, our future logistics conference from Logistics UK. Our outstanding ride and drive opportunity on the Farnborough International Circuit. And new for 2022 for the first time, Cold Chain Hub. ITT Hub at Farnborough International, May 11th and 12th.
It does make me often think as to whether we're even recruiting in the right place. Now, as everybody who's listening to this knows, it's a lot easier to sit on the sidelines and tell other people what they should do as opposed to actually being in the job and doing it like you are. But I have often wondered, as part of trying to keep our costs low, we've tried to keep, obviously, wage rises as low as possible. And I just wonder whether that just doesn't cause us to be pitching for labour in a particular part of the market. And of course, I'd love to prove, and I don't have any way of doing it, I'd love to prove that if there was a significant change in pay and conditions for bus staff, but also a significant change in the requirements in terms of performance, accidents, health, behaviours and so on, because there's no free lunch in this, you wouldn't mind paying more if you got better people. And if those better people stayed with you longer, had fewer accidents, required less uniform, and generally were longer stayers, it would pay back very quickly. However, the downside with that is all the cost is in year one and all the benefits are in years 3, 4, and 5. So I was never able to do it in my time, but I still wonder whether we are pitching in the right labour market.
I think there's definitely more to do to unbox and explore that. It's a very difficult thing to make the case for. And of course, we are in an industry that's, as I said, has ever-increasingly tightening margins. Actually, during the pandemic, there's been no margin because we've, and rightly so, because we've been in receipt of government support to keep essential services going. That's been on a not-for-profit basis. The industry and the government wants the industry to get back onto a commercial footing as quickly as possible. The BRG1 and now BRG2 is a reducing form of subsidy that ultimately is designed for a new commercial industry to pop out the other end. But I'm very painfully aware that in some parts of the industry that's actually meaning losses. I mean, we have parts of our network that are currently losing money at the moment, and that doesn't really give the economic environment and the headwinds, the headroom to be doing some of that stuff. But I think that there are things that we can do. I mean, we did a pay deal with our workforce last year that was more than we really could afford, but it was what we had to do to keep pace with what was going on economically, and a part of that did involve unwinding some of the erosion of new starter terms and conditions that's been seen in the industry for many years, and I do believe that that's something that I think we will see more of. You know, the headline, the starter rate, whilst I think some of the sort of longer service terms and conditions and rotor arrangements are not that bad, really, in terms of the attractiveness of the role alongside some of the other jobs that you could be doing in the economy out there. There's definitely more to do. But yes, there's a cost to recruitment, there's a cost to training, there's a cost to uniforms, there's a cost to anybody having an accident, bump on the road, so on and so forth. And I think looking at that bigger picture is something that we need to be doing more of when we position things going forward. But the pressures out there are enormous, both for the companies and for the employees as well. The world is changing at a rapid pace of knots. We've already mentioned the greater demands for work-life balance and that comes with sort of family-friendly working. As somebody said to me recently, that's all well and good, but somebody still has to do the late turn on a Saturday. This is a shift work industry. And that doesn't suit some people. Well, that's fine, but equally for some people, it does. But I think the closest I've seen to what you talk about there, Leon, is in my previous role at Reading Buses, where I'll give full credit to James Freeman, the chief exec that I took over from there, where they changed the whole recruitment strategy to be about people who like people, with the ethos to say, we can train you on the technical aspects of the job, on how to drive the bus, how to issue the tickets, where the routes go. What we can't train somebody is a like and an ability to enjoy the interaction with people and to give that great customer service that really is at the heart of us winning and retaining new customers.
No, you're right, because to some extent, especially now with contactless payment, there's a slight reduction in the price sensitivity. So here I am as a rational purchaser, sophisticated retail shopper. Even I will pay £3.25 for a tea bag in a cardboard cup and some hot water at a mainline railway station, even though the tea bag costs a few pence and the cup costs a few pence and so on. And why am I not sensitive about the price? Well, it's not real money because it's just a contactless payment. It's one of 1,000 transactions on my statement. So for me, going contactless has reduced the price sensitivity a bit. And today we'll be using contactless, were we not, on your services and on the Voltra. It does the whole day capping and weekly capping and does all of that work. So are we seeing any evidence that people are less fussed about price?
I mean, I think there's different economic scales of our user base, and there is definitely a very price sensitive tier of users still, and we must remember our core social demographic as bus operators is people are, some of our users are still on pay-as-you-go mobile phones, so people are still on a electricity meter that they have to go down the shop and top up every couple of days, and we have to be really careful that we don't use our own personal experiences of how we interact and pay for things and the economics of things versus our customers who perhaps are in a very different economic situation. That said, I think buses are exceptionally good value for money, despite what some people might say politically. You've given a great example there of comparing the unit cost of a bus fare versus something else in society around us. A cup of coffee, even a chocolate bar, they're bus fare prices. And actually, they weren't many years ago. A cup of coffee or a chocolate bar was more than a bus fare. And I think that if we compare the cost of commodity items that we purchase in our lives, that will help us better calibrate the value of a bus fare. But we have been working at both ends of the market. So for our sort of core local journeys, it is very much a price-sensitive market. We've actually done quite a lot of discounting, and that's been very successful. We've seen a very quick payback of some of the discounting that we've done, some simplification of our fare zones. My early views of arriving here was that our bus fares were too expensive because of the historic approaches of the traditional, let's put the fares up every year. Well, costs rise every year, and we do need some element of recovery of that, but equally we need to think about the competitiveness of our fares to drive growth. How do they compare to the cost of car parking? Because if you are comparing yourself with driving a car, actually, you've just made the point about contactless transactions being lost on one's bank statements. Well, you know, it's the same with a car, isn't it? The finance cost, the insurance, the tax, the breakdown cover, it's all a sunk cost. What people really feel is gold coins in parking meters. They don't even feel petrol or diesel at some point, because that was put in last week and they've already got it in the tank. So for me, a good barometer of the value for money of bus fares is compared to the cost of parking, and that's the sort of leveller where sometimes we get these extreme cases of free car parking, and you think, well, okay, where's the public transport equivalent to incentivise the use of that? Conversely, at the other end of the market, with our sort of core commuting routes, it's about still making sure that the journey is good value for money, but we have got the payment options on the smartphone app and with contactless bank cards that I think go into the sort of arena that you sort of... And I suppose for me, the ideal is that we have that sort of iTunes for buses, you know, it just automatically... Nobody bats an eyelid buying their 99 pence tunes. Well, actually, they now have a subscription service to Apple Music or whatever, so it's gone on another leap beyond them. But it's divorcing the sort of pain of handing over money from the point of purchase, but we've still got to keep it good value for money, and that for me is about the cost of parking. And of course, the other big element is around group travel. Once you start having two or three people travelling together, people always say, well, it was cheaper to get a taxi. And that's where our evening fare, we've now got £2 any journey across the Go North East network after 7 p.m. We had that as a special offer, discounted price, or even just £1 for up until Christmas. And that's been really good at encouraging people to try the bus for the first time, because you go, oh, that's really simple, isn't it? We don't even have to worry about different ticket types and where we get on and where we get off, and that's definitely cheaper than any other mode of transport we could have. And that's driven a lot of people to the bus for the first time. We've then got them on board. They've realised that buses are not how they remembered them. They're not dirty, smelly, unreliable. They're actually really modern, great environment, the sort of things you've spoken about earlier. And some of those people we know we've been able to now trade up into daytime customers.
You raise an interesting point there, because I guess, like a lot of people, I know I've got some leakage in my bank account for those subscriptions that I haven't got round to cancelling, for that monthly subscription for three greetings cards a month, which was an expedient to send one greetings card once, but now every month it comes around and it's only, you know, £2.99 or something. But of course, it's another £36 over the year. And I wonder whether we've got anything to learn on that. Is there a way we could make a monthly or an annual bus fare effectively a purchased in advance Apple subscription? Because if people will do it for things they don't really need, surely they must do it for something they do.
I think that, yes, we absolutely should be aiming for that, and I'm very mindful that some of the tickets that we have now available, in our case, on our app, we have an app subscription service. And whilst we've just talked about actually how good value bus fares are, really, when you calibrate them against other things in the world around us, it's still quite a higher cost purchase than your $9.99 a month gym membership or your $4.99 a month television service subscription. We're actually, there are sort of weekly or every couple of day type prices, so we're actually dealing with a commodity that's four or five times the price of that. That's not to say that it's poor value for money, but it is therefore a more thought through and emotional purchase, and therefore I think that we have to accept that the value of our product isn't at a pricing point that perhaps that's going to be quite as feasible, certainly as a discretionary purchase. If somebody's genuinely using it and is a regular user, yes, absolutely, and we're already seeing that take off. But as a means to attract new occasional users, I think the value of what we're offering is slightly greater than perhaps the emotional headroom for that to happen.
Oh, that's interesting. So finally, Martin, here we are in the Northeast, a place that narrowly avoided a quality contract many years ago. But like all parts of England, this area has had to produce a bus service improvement plan, which in aggregate, all of them together, are going to cost three, four times more money than is really anticipated. So what's the enhanced partnership deal up here in the Northeast?
So we were actually ahead of the curve in terms of agreeing with our local political leaders that we were going to have a formal partnership. Back in last Easter, the leader of the region's Joint Transport Committee, Councillor Gannon, actually wrote to the DfT to say we will now be taking forward a formal partnership with our bus operators. And that was born out of the strength of the relationship that was already getting better before the pandemic. We relaunched the Bus Operators Association as Anybus, which is something that I chair. We got better at communicating the investment and innovation that was going into the bus network. And when the pandemic hit, it really drove people to work together in a way that we'd not seen before. Yeah, we had mutual acceptance of ticketing as soon as services were reduced. We had better coordination of service change dates, weekly updates on performance statistics, coordinated activities on face coverings, all sorts of things. And that got us to be able to have a lot more open and frank discussions, reflect and recognise the huge progress that's been made already on improving the region's buses, but also being realistic to say there are going to be challenges ahead, and the best way we're going to be able to face those challenges is together in a deeper partnership. So we really, really welcome the Bus Back Better National Bus Strategy and the mandating of enhanced partnerships. We're ahead of the curve on the partnership framework. And what we now have is a much better governance structure for working through some of the already funded activities on highway scheme improvements and ITS traffic signal stuff. We've been able to enhance the multi-operator ticketing scheme here in the Northeast, the Network One ticket. It's now available on a smart card that works on the metro barriers, works on the buses, works on the ferry. It's been extended to and from County Durham and Northumberland. And yes, we have an £804 million bus service improvement plan bid into government. Let's hope we get some of that, because there is a real desire to do even more. There is a bit of a ravine to cross with a bridge in the meantime in terms of recovering passenger numbers and supporting as much of the network as possible to get us to that point of further improvement. We also need to be realistic that the working patterns and travel demands of people have changed. Traffic congestion is even worse now than it was pre-pandemic, even with fewer people travelling into offices. So there will inevitably need to be some changes, but I think with a far closer working relationship and partnership, we can navigate that and get a good outcome. The big thing that we need to be doing more of is talking about the positive aspects of the Northeast, because unfortunately, those dark days that you mentioned with a quality contract led to a lot of sort of infighting and talking down of a bus network that's actually pretty good. It's pretty good, and it can be even better if we get behind it and support it and take it to greater heights.
And you know, I'm always persuaded by the fact that our industry wastes a lot of money in congestion. If only we had the freedom to move, we could do the whole job with less resource, so it would be cheaper, the service would be faster, and therefore more attractive. So is there a real hope as part of your bus service improvement plan that some major bus priority measures will come through in the Northeast?
Absolutely. We have some pretty decent bus priority measures here already, but we always need more, and we have hotspots that were problematic before the pandemic and are even more exaggerated now and need urgent attention. Also, park and ride is missing from the very north of the Tyne and Wear infrastructure, and before the pandemic, congestion was the single biggest challenge facing the industry. It wasn't a new issue, it's been an issue for 20-30 years, but we've adapted and we've continued to build upon it. I think the COVID impact has kind of overshadowed that, and I'm really passionate that we don't forget just how serious congestion is. It still needs urgent action if buses are really going to fulfil their true potential.
Martin, that's brilliant. So we've been together for 24 hours, which has been remarkable. We saw the city centre in action last night. We've travelled across the network. We've been to Beamish. We're now currently at Consett, and very shortly, this long lunch is going to have to come to an end. So I've had a really wonderful time here on Go North East territory in Newcastle and County Durham, which is, of course, my ancestral home. I've really enjoyed being with Martin and really enjoyed taking a look at all the really wonderful things that are happening on this network. It is worth coming to see some really good demonstrations of what public transport ought to look like, and also what an attention to detail delivers. Everything in terms of design, colours, cleanliness, outturn of the vehicles, the behaviour of the staff, it is just worth coming and seeing. So please come to the northeast of England, see what's taking place here in this beautiful sun-drenched countryside, which we can see today, which is absolutely remarkable. And as I said, we'll be having a full episode all about the team at Beamish in another time. So there we are. My guest has been Martin Gilbert, who is in charge at Go North East, and indeed East Yorkshire as well. We've had a really good time, as I said. And this has been an ITTHub.net production. ITTHub.net. Please go there for all the latest transport news and for details of this podcast and indeed our other series of podcasts as well. And of course, we'd like to see you in May at ITTHub, the event, which takes place at Farnborough. For now, all it leaves me to say is to say thank you very much indeed to Martin Gilbert.
Thank you.